Welcome to The Sounds of Sand, a podcast inquiring into the beauty and mystery of existence beyond ultimate truths.
So, good morning, good afternoon. Welcome, everyone. Yes, my name is Maurizio Benazzo.
My name is Aya Benazzo.
We are here in the territory of the Pomo and Coastal Miwok, also now called Northern California, Sebastopol. And we are delighted to be here with each and every one of you. Thank you.
And welcome, Dee. Thank you so much for being with us today. And we will start with reading a brief bio. So for those who don't know who you are, which I doubt anyone here, but in case.
So let me start with that. Richard Schwartz, PhD, is the creator of the internal family system, a highly effective, evidence-based therapeutic model that depathologized the multi-part personality. He's currently on the faculty of Harvard Medical School and has published 5 books. Dick lives with his wife, Jeannie, near Chicago, close to his 3 daughters and his growing number of grandchildren, which always to me is refreshing when an author, a personality, somebody talks about, put themselves, the family in the bio. To me is a sign of sanity, if you wish, in a bizarre way, because it means the priorities are straight. So thank you for who you are and what you do. Thank you.
Thank you. It's great to be with you guys again. And yeah, I've been looking forward to this. So very excited.
Yeah. Well, maybe, Dick, we can start with a little introduction for those of us who are not familiar with IFS. Maybe just a brief introduction. What do you call parts? Are parts parts of the ego? Are they parts of the self? Are they states of self? And maybe something about trauma, how the parts relate to trauma and traumatic experiences in childhood.
So I'm going to go back in time to about 40 years. This is, I think, our 40th anniversary. And I just graduated with a PhD in family therapy and tried to prove that family therapy could do anything and failed to do that. And out of frustration, started asking these bulimic kids I was doing this outcome study with what was going on. And they started talking this language of parts. And I first thought, boy, they're sicker than I thought, because they were talking about these parts as if they had a lot of autonomy and were full range personalities. And they had relationships with each other inside their minds. And so I came, like most of us, from this idea that if you have these little people inside of you, you must be pretty crazy. So, and then I started noticing that I've got them too, which was very disconcerting. And so long story short, I ultimately, because I tried to get my clients to stand up to their inner critics and control the binging parts and all that stuff, and they were getting worse. And just by accident, I discovered that there's a different way to relate to them. And I began trying to get my clients to get curious about them. And as they did, they found out that these parts that seem so horrible in their lives, if you just ask them some questions, would reveal how they're trying to protect the client. And they're stuck in time back during traumas, and they carry what we're going to call burdens, which are extreme beliefs and emotions that came into our system from a trauma, from what's called attachment injuries or bad parenting or any, you know, bad things happening in their lives. And these extreme beliefs and emotions then drive the way the part operates, almost like a virus after they've entered that part. And so yeah, I'm moving very quickly through a lot of content, but the basic idea is that we're all naturally multiple. that people with that diagnosis of multiple personality disorder are no different from anybody else, except that their system got blown apart more by the daily, usually abuse and trauma that they suffered. But the full range personalities are what we are. We're born that way. And it's a good thing because they're all valuable. And if they hadn't been hurt and they were just in their naturally valuable states, we'd hardly notice them because they are just in there getting along with each other and helping us different ways. But that isn't the way most of us experience life. And so they're forced out of their naturally valuable states into these extreme roles. And as a family therapist, as I was hearing about that, I tried to create a kind of map that I, similar to what I would create in a family, of the different relationships and the different roles. And the big distinction that leaped out immediately was between parts that before they were hurt, you might call these delightful inner children who would give you lots of openness and innocence and creativity and love and spontaneity and joy. But they're the most sensitive parts of us, so they get hurt the most. And so they pick up the burdens of worthlessness or terror or emotional pain from the things that happen to us, especially when we're kids. And when these young parts start to get burdened that way and get frozen in those scenes, now we don't want to be around them because they have the power to pull us back into those times and make us feel all that again. And so we try to lock them away in inner basements or abysses. So we come to call those the exiles. And most of us come out of our families, come out of our environments with a lot of exiles. And some of them aren't exiles because they got hurt. Some just our families didn't like. They didn't like certain kinds of parts. So we had to lock those up to survive in our family. And when you have a bunch of exiles, you feel more delicate, the world seems more dangerous. So there's a whole other set of parts that become what we call protectors. And some of them will protect you or protect the exiles or keep the exiles contained by managing your life so that no one gets close enough, for example, to hurt you again, or so you look perfect all the time, so you don't get rejected, or so you perform at a high level to counter the worthlessness, or so you take care of everybody, so they depend on you, and you don't allow yourself to take care of yourself. Or I could go on and on, but these are just common manager, what we call manager protector roles that we all have that, you know, it's often known as the ego. The ego in spirituality is just a term for a collection of these little managers that are trying their best to keep you safe and run your life. And they get a bad name in spirituality, unfortunately. So that's something we can talk about as we go. So we've all now got a bunch of these managers who try to preempt anything that might trigger us and try to keep you in control and try to please everybody. But the world has a way of breaking through those defenses and triggering your exiles. And when that happens, it's a big emergency because these flames of emotion come shooting out and overwhelm you and make it so not only do you not feel bad, but maybe you can't even function and you lay in bed for a week or something. And so there's another set of parts who stand by for that emergency and try to get you away from that in some extreme way often. Maybe get you higher than those flames of emotion or douse them with some substance or distract you until they burn themselves out. So we call those firefighters because they're fighting the exiles' emotions. And most of us have a kind of hierarchy of those. So if the first one doesn't work, we go to the next one, so on. And you know, along the way, there are addictions and there are rage and there's dissociation. The top of the hierarchy for most all of us is suicide. You know, if it gets too bad, we have that exit strategy. So these are all protectors. Some of them are trying to manage everything, so we call them managers. Others are firefighters, but they're both trying to contain the exiles and to protect the exiles. So that's the map that's held up pretty well for these 40 years. But the big deal about IFS is that in addition to these parts that I described, and again, I just want to make it clear, what I just described is not the essence of the part, which is the mistake that so many spiritualities and psychotherapies make. It's the roles they were forced into. Just like kids in a family, in a dysfunctional family, the kids have to take on roles to protect themselves or protect the family. Same things with this inner system. So, and as a family therapist, once I got hip to the fact that they weren't what they seemed and they deserved to be listened to and helped, I started trying to get clients to do that. And so I might have one of you guys talk to your critic and trying to get you to listen to it and learn about why it's so mean to you and what it's really trying to do. And as you're doing that, suddenly you hate the critic. And it reminded me of family sessions where I'm trying to have two family members talk to each other, and suddenly a third one comes in and is causing all kinds of trouble and is allied against the other one. And so we, as family therapists, learn to get that person to just relax back, step out of the line of vision of the two who are talking, and they settle down and have a better conversation. And I thought, maybe the same thing's happening in this inner world. Maybe as I'm trying to get you to talk to your critic or listen to your critic, a part who hates the critic has jumped in. And so I began asking, could you find that one and ask it to just give us a little space and relax back until we're done? And to my amazement, clients could do that. Not all the time, but most of the time. And when they did, it was like a different person would pop out who not only didn't hate the critic, but was really just genuinely curious about it and also would have compassion for it, felt bad that it had to do this all the time and was confident relative to it and so on. And in that state, the conversation with the critic would go really well and the client would learn about what it was protecting and we could negotiate with it and we could actually get permission to go to what it protected and heal that and then free the critic up to transform. So as I would try that same, you know, get these parts to open space, get the one who hates it to step back, get the one who's terrified of it to step back. In other clients, the same person would pop out with those same qualities of confidence, curiosity, compassion, calm, creativity, clarity. I'm listing the 8C word qualities of self. Connectedness and courage. I think I got 8. So as I saw that happening universally, the same person would pop out and would know how to run things, how to start to heal these parts. I would ask, what part of you is that? Because that was really great. And people would say, that's not a part like these others. That's me. That's myself. So I came to call that the self with a capital S to distinguish it from the other use of the term self. And it turns out now, 40 years later, I can safely say that that self is in everybody, can't be damaged, knows how to heal, and is just beneath the surface of these parts such that when they open space, it pops out spontaneously. So for me, that's the big deal about IFS, that's who we really are. And that in that place, you can heal yourself and you can also heal your relationships.
So many questions. What I heard you say is that we are born with parts, like the parts are there, and then we attach narratives or emotions or somatic patterns to those
Sorry, when somebody's coming here.
So we, if you can speak to that, like how takes on a character the part, what I'm hearing, and well, where does it live in our bodies?
Yeah, so I do believe we're born with them either manifest or in potential. Like infant researchers talk about four or five states, like Barry Brazelton talks about five states that infants rotate through, and maybe those are the parts that are online when you're born, and then others come along at their developmentally right place and pop out, like when you put your two-year-old child to bed who was very compliant, then overnight comes this part that says no to everything. So, and if they aren't burdened, if these parts don't, if you as a child don't get hurt during that period, these parts will be in their naturally valuable state. So I'm saying it isn't that they become characters. They're born with those characteristics and they're all valuable, but they become forced out of their naturally valuable states by what happens to us. So yeah, that's, you know, it's not the usual way to think about various kinds of symptoms and the DSM and all of that. But yeah, this is kind of radical in that way.
And when we work with the parts, do you work on a narrative level, on the story level, on the somatic level, on the...
Well, all of it. So the best way to do it is to demonstrate it, if either of you wanted to give it a try. Maurizio, you want to try it?
Yeah, totally fascinating. When you were describing, I was hearing the inner critics and, you know, anyway, yeah. You want to do it, Z?
No, go ahead.
Okay, so is there a part you want to get to know or change your relationship with?
Yeah, there is a little inner critic. I'm just calling it a little for some probably reason that you know better than me. There isn't a critic that tells me that I'm most of the time useless. I don't understand. You don't get it. Can you shut up? You don't have anything intelligent to say. Why are you there? You're a total fraud.
Perfect.
This kind of guy.
So that's a great place to start. So how do you relate to it normally, would you say? Do you fight with it? Do you believe it? How does it go?
I often believe it, and I try to calm it down, and very often it's very okay. Let's also be clear: he's not screaming at me all the time. He appears. My state of mind often is I'm just thankful to be where I am and who I am. But at times, this character appear.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would say I sort of believe it.
Yeah. Okay. So do you sense it right now or is it offline right now?
I can call it in right now.
Let's call it in. Yeah.
Yeah.
And see where you find it in your body or around your body.
Oh, wow. It's appearing on my belly and in my throat.
Okay, great. And as you notice it there, how do you feel toward it?
Yeah, I would like him to get the hell out of here, to leave me alone.
Of course. But we're going to ask the part that would like to get rid of him to just relax back for a while so we can just get to know him in a different way. So see if the part that dislikes him so much could just give us a little chance to get to know him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how do you feel toward him now?
I can understand it. I can justify it. I feel a bit of compassion because I can see that he's very young.
Yeah, he's young.
Very young. I mean, I'm getting emotional.
That's great.
When I name his age.
Yeah, so let him know you see that he's young. He doesn't know what else to do but to yell at you. And see how he reacts to your compassion.
He's coming towards me and he hugs me.
Say it again. He's coming towards
me. Coming towards me and he hugs me.
He hugs you. That's great. Yeah. So let's just hug him for a while.
Yeah.
Just hug him. Let him know he's with you now. He doesn't have to do this now.
I see the place. I see exactly the place where he was living, this little boy. I see the furniture, the room. I'm imagining a specific place in the middle of a room.
You have a sense of how old he is?
Yeah, he's 6 years old.
6 years old, yeah. Yeah, so he's still hugging you?
Yeah, it's here. I'm holding him low. Okay. My body.
Yeah. So while you hug him, ask him if there is more he wants you to know about what it was like back there when he was six and he took on this role.
He just wants to stay.
He doesn't want to talk. Okay.
He doesn't want to be hold.
Yeah, just keep holding him then.
Yeah.
And let him know that you really care about him now. You're going to stop fighting with him now that you know who he really is.
I think he's getting at peace.
He's more at peace.
He really needs to be recognized. He needs to be seen. I have to hear his voice. When I hear that voice, I have to see this little boy and go to this little boy instead of just hearing the voice and take it as a God talking to me. It's a 6 years old talking to me. That's that sensation. And yeah, so I have to go and hug him.
That's right. Yeah, that's great to know that's really who he is. He's just a scared little boy who didn't know what else to do.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, just stay with him. You're doing great. It's really good to hold him, hug him.
He's pushing me away and he starts running around and playing again.
Okay. You know, you can see if he would like to leave that place with you, that time and place, and come to the present or come to your house there.
Oh, never brought him here.
See if he'd like to get out of there.
I think he loves it. Yeah, he likes it.
He'd like to come there with you?
Yeah.
So just tell me when he's there with you.
Ooh, that's freaky. I never thought of bringing him here.
Yeah.
Frozen there. That's huge.
Yeah.
That's huge.
So he likes your house there?
He's looking around. Yeah, he likes it. He's going outside, looking at the window, going outside, the birds, looking at the dog. He likes it, yeah.
So tell him he never has to go back there.
Oh, wow.
And you're going to be looking after him this way.
Oh, okay.
And with that, you can see if he'd like to unload the feelings and beliefs he's been carrying that made him into that critic.
Right, because he doesn't know anything else other than the 6 years old boy when mommy died.
When what?
When mommy's dying, he's alone in the house. And
And
he doesn't see what happened afterward. He's frozen in that time.
That's right. He didn't know you. He didn't know you could take care of him.
Yeah, he doesn't know that life is different now.
That's right. So show him around. Let him really get it, that he doesn't have to live back there when your mother died.
Yeah. I left him behind.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was easier.
You can apologize for doing that to him.
He likes it.
Good.
Yeah.
So ask him again if there are any feelings or beliefs that he'd like to unload now that he's safe.
Oof. He's apologizing.
Why is that?
I don't know. He's apologizing. I'm sorry I tell you all this stuff.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
Well, he didn't know any better, like we said.
Yeah, I think he's trying to bribe me to stay.
And what do you say to him?
Yeah, you can stay. I mean, we are me. Yeah, just a beer now.
Okay. Yeah. So how's he doing now?
He's delighted. He's running out in the garden.
Oh, good. Okay.
Go on.
So, does this feel like a place we could come back?
Yes, totally. Totally. Yeah. Huge.
So, yeah, that was great. And just to follow up, it's really great you could do this. And if you could do this every day, just check on him every day for a couple months, then this change will stick. So, yeah, that's also very important to follow up. And, yeah, watch this video again so you remember all of it. And, yeah, but that was a beautiful piece of work, Maurizio.
No, it was beautiful for me. Thank you. I never thought of it. It's been frozen in that living room.
That's right.
See, and every time I thought about him, I go there and take care of him there. And then I leave.
Yeah.
For, 60 years.
Right.
And now it's here with me. It's like completely. Oh.
Yeah. And now.
I never thought about these parts of me. I'm bringing my ancestors here with me. I never brought my old me here.
That's right. And I think the title of this was Creating Wholeness or something like that. And, while he was locked away, you didn't have access to all these great qualities of his. And now you do.
Thank you. Yeah.
So that's IFS.
Wow.
Might be connected to our ancestors or what you call burdens, burdens, or and how
legacy burdens.
How do you work when you recognize that pattern might be coming, that part is formed?
So just to stay with Maurizio's example, If we had found in talking to the critic that it maybe echoed your father's voice or something like that, or it carried your father's energy, that could well be an example of a legacy burden that you took in from your father, who took it in from his father, and so on, that may be related to some trauma that happened to your ancestors centuries ago. And so most all of us carry some legacy burden that came from our ancestors or our ethnic group, or, you know, just in the US, there are all kinds of these things floating around that we absorb also. And so, yeah, helping people find and unload these legacy burdens has become a big part of IFS too. And just to stay with that example, if he said, yeah, I got this, this is my father's voice, I would have said, do you like having, I would have you ask him if he likes having to carry that legacy burden, or would he like to unload it? And if he doesn't want to carry it, he doesn't have to. So we could set it up where he could just send it out as soon as he decided he didn't want to carry it anymore. A lot of these parts will say, well, I didn't know I had a choice. I just thought that's who I was, or that's what I had to do. So legacy burdens are in some ways easier to unburden because it didn't happen in your life. So you don't have to witness where you got all this from the past. All you need to do, all the part needs to do, is decide that it's ready to unload it. Now, there are some legacy burdens where if you ask the part, do you want to unload it? You might say, well, I can't, because that would be being disloyal to my people. I have to keep remembering what happened, and I have to keep, and, or I took in that for my father so that he wouldn't have to carry it. And he, you know, he'll feel worse if I don't carry it. So there are some, you know, there are some fears about giving up legacy burdens. But yeah, anyway.
And is the conversation always between the parts, or is the self with the parts?
Yeah, well, the piece of work we just did, I had Maurizio find the critic. He found it in his body, because you'd asked earlier, how does this relate to the body? And then I asked this question, how do you feel toward this one? And in asking that, I'm trying to assess how much of his self is present. And he said, I want to get rid of it, or some version of that. I don't like it. So that's clear to me, there's some part there, not his self. And so I had him ask that one to give us a break, and it did. To its credit, you have a lot of trust of your parts in you. And then as soon as I got that one to step out and I asked again, now how do you feel toward the part? I heard a huge amount of self, because he immediately said, I feel sorry for him, and I have compassion. I see him as a little guy. So he had the clarity of self, you know, the C word clarity, because he could see this wasn't this looming, you know, authority, it was just a little kid. And he had the C word compassion, and he had confidence relative to it, and he was calm. So I knew I had a lot of self. And so then I have his self become the good attachment figure to this little boy, rather than me, the therapist. So this is kind of attachment theory taken inside. Right. If that makes any sense.
Yes. Yeah, very much. Yeah. Yeah.
So basically, Maurizio's self would be interacting and telling me what's happening to all of his parts. He becomes the leader to all these parts that they didn't really know, like this boy didn't know about you. And so, yeah, the first goal is helping these parts transform into their naturally valuable states. But the second goal is to have them all come to trust yourself as the leader. And then the third goal is helping the parts get to know each other and relate in a harmonious way. And then the fourth goal is to lead your external life from self. So those are the four goals of IFS.
Can you repeat the last one?
Yeah, so that you don't run your life from these managers all the time, or from your firefighters, that you're actually leading with these eight C word qualities in the external world too, in your relationships and in your career and like that.
And would you say that the more in time we get intimate with those parts and we meet them often, they relax or they dissolve, they don't come as strong as they are screaming for attention, or no?
They don't dissolve. I really I have an allergy to that language or ego death or any of that stuff, because it scares these managers. So they transform. They change, so you don't notice them nearly as much. So it seems like they dissolve, but they're still there. They're just in their naturally valuable roles as they heal. And they don't, you know, you don't notice them nearly as much, and they don't feel the need to run things as much. So in family therapy, we used to have this concept of parentified child, where kids would feel like they had to run the family because the parents had abdicated. And many of these manager parts are like that. They're in over their heads. They're young, like this six-year-old, and they don't know what to do but to yell at you. And so we're just helping them trust there is somebody else. There's Maurizio in there who can handle things. And he's not 5 years old anymore. He's not six, I think it was. He's actually a grown man. He's not in the same kind of danger. His mother didn't just die. And helping them update that way and trust you to lead their lives just helps them relax entirely and do valuable things.
Thank you. You want to?
No, yeah. I am completely blown away by in few seconds you were able to unfreeze, because every time I have a relationship with this boy, and once in a while I go there and hug him and stay with him a little bit, I never thought of taking it with me.
Yeah,
it's frozen in time. Yeah. So he remained a separate self in his own in that nightmare. He's there in his confusion alone. And
when
I go visit, it's like, you know, an old family member that you go once a year, I come and see you for 3 days. Good. So.
And he's likely not the only one. There's probably a bunch of parts stuck back in that time.
Yep. But let's move on. No, I mean, I'm delighted to continue, but I think it's not fair for, you know, this. A lot of people are asking questions. By the way, if you have questions, please put them in the Q&A. Section and raise your hand at the same, so we know between a raised hand and the question itself. So don't message us.
Maybe before we open for questions, because there's lots of questions, if you can say something, Richard, Dick, about outer states of consciousness, but could be meditation, could be illness, or could be psychedelics, and what happens to the parts.
Yeah.
When we go states.
Yeah. So first let me just say that when I ran into this self in people, I couldn't believe it, because I'd been trained to believe that for people to have those qualities, they had to have gotten them from good parenting or from some kind of relationship, that it wasn't inherent in us. And yet I was working with people who'd had horrible, horrible childhoods, and still it was like the same qualities would come out just by getting these parts to open space. And I couldn't ground that in traditional psychology anywhere. And then I had some students saying, but maybe that's like Atman, or maybe that's like Buddha nature, or maybe that's like Christ consciousness, and so on. So I looked into all that, and that turns out that virtually every spiritual tradition knows about this, and almost no psychologies do. And that I stumbled onto a way to access it very quickly. And so for me, that what I'm calling the self that Maurizio just accessed in a big way is a drop of a bigger ocean that other systems might call God, or the oneness, or the non-dual, or that You know, I love the metaphor from quantum physics of a proton being both a particle and a wave. So there's this wave state of self that you can enter through meditation or through psychedelics, and you don't feel like an individual, you just feel connected to everything. And then you start coming back into your body as the meditation ends or the medicine wears off. And suddenly, yeah, oh my God, I'm particleized. I'm separate. I'm not connected to everything. I'm, you know, there's this time thing again. And, but it's the same self is the point I'm making, just in a different form. So when you take psychedelics, for example, in general, it's a big generalization, but somehow the medicine puts the managers to sleep, which again, I hate the terms ego death or ego dissolution because it scares them unnecessarily. They just kind of go to sleep for a little while. And when they go to sleep, just like with Maurizio, you access a huge amount of self suddenly. And when you access a whole lot of self, it's a big invitation for all these exiled parts to start coming home. And so we can do a huge amount of healing because people can access that. And then, especially with like higher doses, people can access that big self for a period of time and really know themselves quite differently, to know that that's who you, that you're just a piece of that, is a really different way to live your life that a lot of spiritual traditions are trying to get to happen. So I'm just going on, but.
But through exiling the ego, so maybe if you can say something, because we've seen that coming back tenfold when the ego is exiled and just go for that one state.
Yeah, that's one of my big crusades, is to help spirituality quit doing that and quit fighting with the critics and quit, you know, I wrote this book called No Bad Parts. There are no bad parts. They're just good parts in bad roles. And too often spirituality has said, no, the ego is your enemy, or it's, you know, a big nuisance, and we've got to do something with it so that you can access this other, these altered states.
Is that the inner,
what?
Is the inner critic saying that? Would you say?
Oh, inner critic wants to, the inner critic wants to get rid of lots of the ego. So that you have this polarization happening also. But it's, you know, it's a manager too. So, and that's part of helping them depolarize, is getting to know each other differently and have self help them see they don't have to fight because they both have the same goal of protecting you. But spirituality in general has an attitude about the ego, which is really a problem. And there's also, as you guys know, a tendency for spiritual bypass. When you use your spirituality to get to that big self place and you feel the bliss of that, but you don't bring it back to your exiles, you use it to stay away from your exiles.
Yeah. And there's the attachment to that, and that runs everything. Yeah.
People become addicted to their spiritual practices.
Yeah. And can you say something about exile parts that become patterns in culture, or they have outwards characters, that societal characters? Can you talk how that happens?
Say more about what you're, I'm not clear what you're asking.
Okay, this is going back to intergenerational trauma. Let's say my ancestors have experienced something, and if that part, how they coped with it, has been exiled or not accepted, it becomes a culture, part of the culture. What we're seeing right now in a big way all over the world.
You can take this map of the exiles and the managers and firefighters and overlay it on a country, for example, or a organization, or, you know, you can take it, and we're doing that more and more. More and more, I'm working with leaders. I think I mentioned that to you. So I recently did a ketamine and IFS retreat for some of the leaders who are trying to put the brakes on AI and try and make it safe, for example. And so anyway, you can overlay this map onto any country that exiles a lot of people is going to have extreme firefighters. And then those firefighters are going to do bad things generally. And then the managers of the country are going to attack them and not realize that they're just trying to get a voice for these exiles, or they're just trying to, you know, protect them in some way. And that becomes the vicious cycle. So in the United States, that, for example, large percentage of the population makes less than their parents now and lives, you know, paycheck to paycheck. And so you could consider them exiles. They live with lots and lots of anxiety and a feeling of the country isn't what it used to be. And so they're very attracted to Trump, who's a big firefighter. And you can't get them to let go of him, no matter what he does, because they feel like he's at least standing up for them. And then we have all the media and that attacks Trump and doesn't really see the pain that's driving Trump and doesn't really look at how to restructure the country so there aren't so many exiles, which would involve tax reform and a lot of things. So if, I don't know if that's what you were asking, but that's what came to mind.
Yes, yeah, thank you.
Thank you, everybody, and thank you, Dick, to the next opportunity. It was really, I mean, personally, I got so much. I got totally like, yum, 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 a huge step forward. So
keep meeting with that guy and with your grandmother. So.
Yeah, I have to figure out a way to take him back from the garden now because he's like praying around like crazy. Like, please, like rolling around. Anyway, yes.
All right. Bye now.
Love you, man. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to The Sounds of Sand. We invite you to explore more of our talks, dialogues, videos, articles, events, and offerings through our website, scienceandnonduality.com. If you've enjoyed this conversation, please consider becoming a member to access our massive library of sand content, available exclusively to sand members. And we would love it if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Google, and Spotify. And share this episode with your family, friends, and all sentient beings. Be well.